From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Today, the Juneau School District voted to make masks optional in school buildings starting April 4th. The district has required masks for the entire school year so far, but then the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention changed its mask-wearing recommendations, and the city lifted its mask mandate. That prompted the school district to send out a survey to families, school staff, and students about whether they want to keep masks. On Tuesday, Juneau School District Superintendent Bridget Weiss went over the results at the Board of Education meeting. Weiss says that students at both high schools were about half for and half against requiring masks. But student representatives at the meeting said that most students they've talked to want to keep masks, especially students in their third and fourth years. Joelle Corpus is the student representative for Juneau Douglas High School, Yada Atkache. She says,
"It's just that we are all excited for prom and we're all excited for graduation. So we had a sudden uprise in cases and prom has to be canceled because of the mask mandate being abolished, then that's not what we want. We want prom. We want graduation. We want all the celebrations that we can have since we are in our final years of high school."
Weiss says most staff and families who took the survey said yes, or maybe, to making masks optional. The board held a second meeting today to make the final decision. Most people who testified to the board wanted to end the mask mandate. Those people argued that most masks don't protect people from getting the virus, that not seeing people's faces is preventing small children from learning. They said that masking should be a choice. Maureen Hall is a school nurse at Harborview Elementary. She says she supports removing masks because the Omicron variant is less severe than the Delta variant. She also says people should consider how to protect children who can't get the vaccine and high-risk children. Christopher Kutu says that too much voice is given to the minority of the population who want to keep masks.
"You've got super majorities of parents as well as staffs that want to change the current mask policies. And with those who are still fearful in that percentage, there are masks that protect that can protect them. And that's the N95 masks."
A few people called in asking the board to keep masks. Some said it was too early to remove masks and that the board should make their decision based on public health guidance, not on parent and staff opinions. Another supporter of masks, Ann Stepitin, says,
"I understand where other parents are coming from, saying making it optional would still allow students to use their masks as they please. I come from a culture where we take care of each other, and our mask wearing is about protecting others, not so much protecting ourselves or fearful of the virus."
The board unanimously voted to end the mask mandate in schools. The new policy is linked to Juneau's community level and to CDC guidelines. If Juneau is at medium or low risk level, masks will be optional. Retired public employees and the state government recently settled two lawsuits over changes in 2014 to the medical and dental plans for retirees. The settlement was announced on Wednesday. The state constitution says that public employees' retirement benefits, quote, shall not be diminished or impaired. But the state and retirees have differed on how to interpret this guarantee. The Retired Public Employees of Alaska, or RPEA, represents more than 4,000 former state and municipal workers. It sued the state in 2016, alleging that changes to dental and other benefits violated the Alaska Constitution. It later filed a second related lawsuit over medical benefits. RPEA President Randall Burns says his group is pleased with the settlement. He says it addresses his members' biggest concern, which was the lack of notice of the changes 8 years ago.
"I mean, literally no notice and no chance to comment, no idea that this was coming. And this agreement gives us an absolute ability to participate and to be aware of about any future changes."
Emily Ricci is the chief health administrator with the State Division of Retirement and Benefits. She worked on the settlement. She says it will help both those who pay for and receive benefits in the long term.
"The division believes that the work that we've done to date really reflects changes in process, improvements in communications that have benefited both the health trust, the plans, and the retirees."
State leaders say the agreement will usher in a new era of cooperation between the retirees and the state. Under the terms of the settlement, retirees will have access to the older of two plans that offer dental, vision, and hearing benefits as long as the plan remains financially viable. The state will draft new regulations for how the public notice is given on plan changes. The Glenn Highway that connects Anchorage to Glen Allen is named after Edwin Glenn. He oversaw the U.S. Army expeditions in Alaska in 1898 and 1899. Later, Glenn was convicted of committing war crimes in the Philippines the year after he left Alaska. There's a bill working its way through the state legislature right now that would start the process of renaming the highway. But one House member is calling the proposal a case of cancel culture. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Edwin Glenn was a career Army officer. In the late 1800s, he oversaw two expeditions in Alaska. Then he went to the Philippines, which at the time belonged to the United States, a trophy from the Spanish-American War. The Filipinos were fighting for their independence. Anchorage historian David Reamer says that Glenn ordered soldiers to waterboard a Filipino man.
When we say he was a torturer, we say this because he admitted this. He admitted to doing these things. He admitted to ordering it. He admitted to overseeing it. He was there at times of torture.
Waterboarding simulates drowning and can cause lasting physical and psychological damage. Soldiers who witnessed what happened talked about it after returning home, leading newspapers to report it. That led to President Theodore Roosevelt and his Secretary of War ordering an investigation. As a result, Glenn was court-martialed. He admitted to what he did, but denied it was torture. He was found guilty, paid a fine, and was suspended from his command for 1 month. Now, Alaska lawmakers are considering a bill that would provide a process for renaming the Glenn Highway. It would require the state to consult with tribes and Alaska Native organizations and communities in the area to provide input on the new name.
This is cancel culture. I want that on the record.
That's Big Lake Republican Kevin McCabe at a March 1st committee meeting.
This is canceling out somebody who, when he did waterboard, did not think it was torture. You make it sound like we're pulling fingernails and that sort of thing. Waterboarding is accepted even today.
That's not true, at least since former President Barack Obama prohibited government agencies from using waterboarding. McCabe says Alaskans don't know what Glenn did because they didn't witness it.
If I look at this bill, if you want to know the truth, this is a bill right here to besmirch the name of a guy that's long dead. Who cares? The guy's long dead. That's all this bill does is besmirch his name.
Joshua Albeza Brandstetter is a member of a group that represents Asian and Pacific Islander people in Alaska. He says changing the Glenn Highway's name would recognize the role Filipino Americans have played in the state for 100 years.
But for this highway to be named after someone who was, for lack of a better term, canceled by the U.S. military and by Teddy Roosevelt, who approved the findings in his case for his war crimes in a war which cost the lives of over 200,000 Filipinos, which has, that history has in turn been canceled from our school books.
Lisa Wade is a member of the Chickaloon Native Village. The highway was informally named after the village, which it runs through, before being named for Glenn.
This bill represents much more than a simple name change. To me, it does not represent cancel culture. It represents an opportunity. It represents an opportunity for us to show respect and maybe even some reconciliation for past harms that were perpetrated against Alaska Native peoples during the time this highway was created, and even the harms to the other Filipino people as well.
She says that area tribes generally don't name things after people, but use the names of geographic features. She says that at the time the highway was built, her tribe suffered greatly.
And history is not one-dimensional. However, that history has long been told from one dimension and has resulted in the invisibility of, you know, the beautiful and unique indigenous peoples at the glamorization of people like Edwin Glenn.
State officials estimate renaming the highway would cost $2 million to change the road signs and other things. But since the bill itself wouldn't rename the road, but just set up a process to do it, it wouldn't cost the state anything if the legislature passed it. That means the bill doesn't have what's known as a fiscal note. For Anchorage Republican Representative Tom McKay, that part doesn't make sense.
It says there's a zero fiscal note, but if it did rename it, there would be a fiscal note because you have to pay for all the road signs to be changed, the maps to be changed.
The House Transportation Committee hasn't scheduled a vote on the bill yet. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Faculty at Santikahini Middle School discovered a covered play area had been vandalized Tuesday morning. There were crude drawings, crude language, someone's phone number, and a swastika. Assistant Principal Laura Scholes says they have had a spate of vandalism at the school this year. She says the swastika feels like an escalation.
It's smiley faces, a couple of, you know, sexually explicit kind of drawings, crude things, but not anything like this.
The swastika has had many meanings across many cultures in history, but for the last century or so, innocuous meanings have largely been displaced by associations with white supremacy and Nazi Germany's mass murder of Jews and other minority groups. Scholes says they painted over the vandalism immediately and, unlike past incidents, reported it to police. Juneau Police spokesman Lieutenant Craig Campbell says it's being investigated. He says individual reports of vandalism are often logged to identify potential trends without much follow-up. But he says this case sticks out and will get more attention, in part because of the swastika, but also because the vandalism included references to a specific person and phone number, meaning this could be some kind of harassment. Campbell wasn't ready to call it hate speech, but didn't rule it out either. Scholes doesn't think it got much exposure, and for now doesn't intend to address it with her school community. She says that could change depending on what the police find out. After KTOO contacted the Anti-Defamation League for comment, the organization said it would reach out to Zante Kahini to offer support. Mary Sipers is the league's regional director, and she says that could include age-appropriate discussions about history, trauma, and the Holocaust.
We always do advise and try to work with K-12 schools to examine and reflect on the incident that happened and think about how they can make it a teachable moment for their students and their broader school community about how they hopefully want to commit to having a school where all students feel a sense of belonging and there aren't, you know, hateful acts of vandalism or other kind of hateful acts that happen.
Cypress says bias incidents are ticking up in schools, which she calls microcosms of our communities. She says exposing these incidents creates opportunities for growth and conversation. Juneau school board members are hopeful about two bills being considered in the Alaska House of Representatives. The bills would partially make up for longstanding issues with Alaska's base student allocation. That's the per-student state funding that goes to schools. The bills came up during a Juneau Assembly meeting with the school board earlier this week. Board member Will Muldoon quickly explained the background of the bills.
I'm going to try and do a quick 25-year review of the BSA and how it works in 4 minutes.
Skip ahead to 2015, when the state stopped reimbursing school bond debt for school building projects. Muldoon said the cost of those projects, combined with a decrease in enrollment in Juneau, means that there's a higher burden on the city to pay for schools. But the city has risen to the occasion, as Mayor Beth Weldon joked.
Thank you, Mr. Holtz. It's very good that you have a generous assembly that gives you money outside the cap.
Currently, the per-student funding from the state is just under $6,000. It's been flat-funded, that means not adjusted for inflation, since 2016. School Board President Elizabeth Sidden says this has created a funding deficit, which limits school staffing.
For all of the sort of confusion around funding formulas and legislation, it really, all of it impacts every single classroom because it's how many kids you have in a classroom and the teacher's ability to give that instruction, whether that's to, you know, 20 kids or 30 kids in a classroom makes a big difference.
Juneau Representative Andy Story introduced two bills that would correct much of this deficit. One will catch up base student allocation to $6,200 over the next two fiscal years and add a bit more after that. The other would inflation-proof the amount for the future. Still, the increase would only make up for a fraction of the inflation the U.S. has seen in the last decade, says board member Brian Holst.
Even though we're super excited that Representative Story has a bill and we hope it's successful, it won't even get us back to where we were 10 years ago in terms of funding for our schools. But it's definitely a step in the right direction. What's really key, of course, is if we could have it tied to inflation, and then we could have steady funding that we could plan for.
And with that step, Juneau School Board hopes it can increase the ratio of teachers to students again. The bills are currently in House committees. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union says they won't touch Russian ships or cargo in solidarity with Ukraine. That's according to a statement the union released last week. The labor union represents more than 20,000 U.S. dock workers across the West Coast. ILWU President Willie Adams said in the statement that the union condemns the Russian invasion of Ukraine. There are about 350 union members working in Alaska. Jeff Hancock is the vice president of the Alaska Longshore Division. He says they are actively tracking vessels which are Russian-owned, operated, or that may be carrying cargo loaded in Russia. Hancock says they don't foresee this action creating a significant effect in local communities because Alaska dock workers don't typically work much Russian cargo as is. The Brooks Camp at Katmai National Park and Preserve will operate at 100% capacity this season for the first time since the pandemic began. Park officials are expecting a big year. Tourists from around the world travel to Katmai in eastern Bristol Bay, which is famous for its bear viewing, especially by the iconic Brooks Falls. There, people can stand yards away from huge brown bears that sit on top of the falls and swim in the river, snatching salmon that jump from the fast-flowing river. The pandemic slowed down human activity there in 2020. Park Superintendent Mark Sturm says visitation was down about 40%. The park had been running campsites at half capacity over coronavirus concerns, but with COVID-19 vaccines and treatments now available, Sturm says park officials are comfortable dialing back precautions. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Thursday, March 10th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.